Well, today we read in our Torah portion and in the Haftarah two different attempts to get into the Promised Land. And there were two different means of doing it. So I want to speak on those today. There were two kinds of spies, and this is what I've titled my message today, because there was one set of spies in the first set, with Moshe, one set of spies with Yehoshua. So let us pray. Abba Father, we just thank you and praise you for the word that you have today, and we pray, Abba Father, that we can see how you show us through your word how you want us to live, how you want us to be, and how you want us to be obedient to your word. Abba, we just thank you for this word, and we just give you the glory in Yeshua's name. Amen. So I want to look at Bamidbar Numbers first in chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. And it says, Yehovah said to Moshe, send men on your behalf to reconnoitre the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel. From each ancestral tribe, send someone who is a leader in his tribe. And then in verses 17 to 20 of the same chapter, Moshe sent them to reconnoitre the land of Canaan, instructing them, go up to the Negev and into the hills, see what the land is like, notice the people living there, whether they are strong or weak, few or many, what kind of country they live in, whether it is good or bad, what kind of cities they live in, are they open or fortified? See whether the land is fertile or unproductive, and whether there is wood in it or not. Finally, be bold enough to bring back some of the fruit of the land. And when they left, it was the season for the first grapes to ripen. They were given specific instructions. So that obviously when they left, they were looking for something. They were going to be looking for something really special in that land. In Yehoshua, it was a different story. Yehoshua the son of Nun, in chapter 2, verse 1, says, Yehoshua the son of Nun secretly sent spies from Shittim with these instructions. Go inspect the land and Jericho. They left and came to the house of a prostitute named Rachav, where they spent the night. So they weren't given a lot of instructions there. Just go out and inspect the land. Where the first lot, they were to seek what the people were like, what the land was like, how much food was there, whether there was timber there. They were given a lot of instructions. So the people that came out of Egypt were given two opportunities to enter the land of Canaan after Yehovah had freed them from slavery that they'd been in for 400 years in Egypt. The two accounts were separated by a period of 40 years. The first account was under the leadership of Moshe, while the second was under Yehoshua's leadership. The two opportunities were so contrasting against one another. So many wrong things occurred in the first attempt, while all the right things occurred in the second attempt. Yah was ready both times. He was ready to give them the land the first time they went in. But the people were not ready. My purpose today is to compare the entrance into the land of Canaan with our intended purpose of entering a life of the promises of Yehovah that are to be enjoyed by us all this very day. We don't have to wait until we get into heaven someday. We can receive our promises now. The promised land of Canaan is so indicative of the life of a believer who comes into the experience of what is promised to us by Yehovah. Certain things will keep us from enjoying his promises. So I will discuss, as we contrast Moshe's day with Yehoshua's day, the reasons many believers are not enjoying Yah's promises today, because they are the very things that kept Israel out of the promised land in Moshe's day. It's happening today. This spiritual land of promises is actually what can be called the resurrection life of Yeshua HaMashiach. If Shaul said that we died, were buried and risen again with Yeshua to walk in his newness of life, and we, even when he was raised from the dead, then we really should be enjoying newness of life. New is the context of this. Newness of life. It means something absolutely different from the former. It should be greater and completely different. There should be major differences in the quality of our lives and the way people see us, as well as the way we behave and the way we act. Is there this kind of difference in your life? Many people will try to uphold a fake believer reputation and insist their lives are indeed different. But this is too serious an issue to try to sweep under the carpet and convince ourselves that we are okay, we're doing all right. If we do not show evidence that we have the goods of a real new sort of life, then in reality, we are the only ones that are deprived. And we will ultimately suffer during our entire lives unless we are honest with ourselves, shake ourselves from lethargy, and enter into the place that we should have entered into a long time ago when we became a believer. So let us look at the differences between Moshe and Yehoshua. Moshe sent 12 men, as opposed to Yehoshua, who chose only two. They had to search out the land to see what was there. Moshe never did tell them that not going in was an option. He simply said, go, take a look at what Yehovah is giving you and what sort of people are there. Are they strong or are they weak? It is our duty to search out the riches that are in Yeshua HaMashiach. Remember the Laodiceans and what sort of church, the congregation, they were from Revelation chapter 3. Because it says in Revelation chapter 3, they were lukewarm. They thought they had it all, but they were blind and naked and poor spiritually speaking. Shaul mentions them and indicates a concern for these type of people in Colossians chapter 2, verses 1 and 3. For it says, I want you to know how hard I work for you, for those in Laodicea and for the rest of those who have not met me personally. My purpose is that they may be encouraged, that they may be joined together in love, that they may have all the riches derived from being assured of understanding and fully knowing Elohim's secret truth, which is the Mashiach. It is in him that all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge are hidden. Inside of Yeshua, our promised land, are hidden the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Verse 10 of Colossians says, and it is in union with him that you have been made full. He is the head of every rule and authority. We are complete in him. That means as believers, we should lack nothing. The reason Shaul was fearful for these people was because they were not enjoying a full spiritual life. They were lacking so much. Not because Yeshua didn't supply all their needs, but because they were not in the land, so to speak, to enjoy his blessings. These things are hidden in Mashiach, and we have to search them out, just as they had to search out the land when they reconnoitred it. But their carnality, like the problem Israel had, was keeping them from enjoying these things. You see, Yehovah will not tolerate a wicked and carnal lifestyle and give you blessings at the same time. Yehoshua's Israel shows a people who cut away the things of the flesh and were actually disapprovals of the kingdom of Yah. The things that they cut away. Then they enjoyed the promised land. When Moshe's Israel shows a people who refused to let go of sin and then therefore did not enter the land. Although both parties had their chance to cross the Jordan or the Yarden River, I want to now compare the Red Sea or the Sea of Suf with that older generation crossed the Yarden experience of the next generation crossed to show you the differences on how the generations worked their way over to the Promised Land. First, we'll look at how both crowds crossed their pertinent bodies of water, the Sea of Suf of Moshe and the Yarden in Yehoshua's day. In Shemot Exodus chapter 12 and verse 38, it says, a mixed crowd went up with them, as well as livestock in large numbers. So I said to you, where are the flock? We never hear about the livestock and the flock and what have you, but they were large numbers, both flocks and herds. So they had with them sheep, goats, cattle in large numbers. They could have eaten more than just man. I'm sure they ate more than just man. They would have milked the goats. They would have had, you know, they didn't stay long enough to make cheese, I don't think. But in some places they could have. They stayed over a year, so therefore they would have. They had things to eat. But man would have been the carbohydrate part of their diet, the fruit and vegetable side of their diet that they weren't carrying with them. Because it tasted, as we read last week, like coriander. So therefore it would have contained the nutrients required for their sustenance of that area of their diet. They had the meat, then they had the coriander from the man. And I know I'm a literalist, so I look at things in a literalist manner. So it's not always written in the word, but Yah shows me through being a literalist from what was there and what wasn't there, what their diet would have been. In Yehoshua's day, and of course, what was the first thing they brought back when they first reconnoitred the land when they first went into the Promised Land? They brought back the grapes that were so heavy, carry, pomegranates, etc., which were the things they could have had from the start. They could have had them after 40 days, not after 40 years. In Yehoshua's day, they were given different instructions, totally different. In Yehoshua chapter 6, verses 3 to 5, it says, you are to encircle the city with all your soldiers and march around it once. Do this for 6 days. 7 Kohanim are to carry 7 shofars in front of the ark. On the 7th day, you are to march around the city 7 times. The Kohanim will blow the shofars. Then they are to blow a long blast on the shofar. On hearing the sound of the shofar, all the people are to shout as loudly as they can, and the wall of the city will fall down flat. Then the people are to go up into the city, each one straight from where he stands. Remember, they're all around the city. What a difference between the two entrances into the Promised Land. When we think of those coming out of Egypt, they were a motley crew of rabble, as opposed to those going in Yehoshua's day, which were a well-ordered, infantry-like, organized group of people. Totally different manner in which they entered. So now I just keep comparing both attempts to enter the Promised Land. In Moshe's day, in Numbers, according to Numbers chapter 13, verses 27 to 29, what they told him was this: we entered the land where you sent us, and indeed it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. However, the people in the land are fierce, and the cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the Anakim there. Amalek lives in the area of the Negev. The Hitti, the Yavusi, and the Emori live in the hills, and the Kenanani live by the sea and alongside the Yarden. Moshe had told them to get the fruit of the land and be of good courage. They could have been eating fruit instead of man, as I said way back then, but the people would not listen to their leader. They got their fruit, but they were still discouraged. On the other hand, in Yehoshua's day, in chapter 2 and verse 24 of Yehoshua, truly Yehovah has handed over all the land to us, they told Yehoshua. Everyone in the land is terrified that we are coming. What a difference. Yehoshua's spies, only two of them, were full of courage instead of being afraid of the enemy. They said the enemy was afraid of them. For Rechav had informed them so. In Yehoshua chapter 2, verses 9 to 11, it says, and he said to them, I know that Yehovah has given you the land. Fear of you has fallen on us. Everyone in the land is terrified at the thought of you. We've heard how Yehovah dried up the water at the Sea of Suf ahead of you when you left Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Emori on the other side of the Yarden, Sichon and Og, that you completely destroyed. As soon as we heard it, our hearts failed us. Because of you, everyone is in a state of depression. For Elohim, your God, is God in heaven above and on earth below. There were two different things in Moshe's day to Yehoshua's day. In Moshe's day, there were doubts and complaints. In Yehoshua's day was a shout. This is a significant difference in the two sets of spies involved in the duration of the spying. We read in Bamidbar Numbers in 13, 25 and 26. It says, 40 days later they returned from reconnoitering the land and went to Moshe, Aharon and the entire community of the people of Israel at Kadesh in the Paran Desert, where they brought back word to them and into the entire community and showed them the fruit of the land. It was there for them to see, but they still brought back doubts. They could see the bounty that they had. But apart from two, 10 of them said, no, we can't do it, we're not going in there. They didn't trust Yah enough. Yehoshua's day, only two went, and Rechav told them, she told them, head for the hills so that that pursuit party won't get their hands on you. Hide yourselves there for 3 days until the pursuers have returned. After that, you can go on your way. And in verse 22, they left, arrived in the hills and stayed there for 3 days until the pursuers had returned. The pursuers had searched all the way, but they hadn't found them. One thing strikes me about this 3 day duration of hiding. It causes me to think, my first thoughts were the 3 days and nights Yeshua was in the grave or in the tomb before he was resurrected. They had to hide for 3 days and three nights. Yeshua was in the tomb 3 days and three nights. Therefore, this whole thing to me of Yehoshua's entrance is like a stake experience. And this is the greatest difference in the people who enter the promises of Yah to those who do not. The doubt and unbelief in the first attempt to enter the promised land came from the 10 doubters because they did not trust Yehovah. In fact, did not even think to trust in him, but looked into their own humanities and became fearful. But the two spies, Yehoshua and Caleb, who trusted in Yah and entered the promised land, the two spies Yehoshua sent were threatened by the rulers of Jericho. So they hid in the mountains for 3 days. That sends a message to me about how we need to face our fears and battles by going to the rock that is higher than ourselves, Yeshua HaMashiach, and waiting on him. We all have battles in life. We've all been through battles in life. And a lot of us have overcome many battles in life. But to go through the battles, we have to face our fears and we have to put our trust in Yehovah and in his son Yeshua. We have to put our faith in him and on that stake experience that Yeshua went through for us. You know, mountains are bigger than giants. We just need our faith strong enough to believe. Hiding ourselves in Yeshua helps us overcome the giants in our lives. And we do that by reading Yah's word and prayers and our faith. Lifting each other up. Being there for each other. Hiding ourselves in Yeshua helps us overcome the giants in our lives. We have to make sure that hiding in him for 3 days still helps us get hold of Yehovah until we realize that that 3 day and 3 night work of the stake is ours and links us to all the power that Yehovah gives us that we will ever need. When you can do that, then you will come out in faith. When we get the truths of the stake into our souls, that is our mind, will, and emotions, by hiding in the cleft of the rock and receiving that third day revelation, we will enter the promises of Yehovah. The stake is in the hearts of those who enter Yah's blessings as opposed to those who fail to succeed. Now, there's nothing wrong with failing. Failing should always be looked at as a further attempt in learning. F-A-I-L. Further attempt in learning. It just means that you try again. And you try again. You cannot fail Yehovah's school. He'll keep giving you the test until you pass it. Don't worry. Whether you like it or not. But you will pass it eventually. But we always succeed when we push on and press in him. In Yehoshua chapter 5, verses 1 to 3, it says, when all the kings of the Emori on the west side of the Yarden and all the kings of the Canaanani near the sea of heard how Yehovah had dried up the Yarden River ahead of the people of Israel until they had crossed it, their hearts failed them, and they fell into depression because of the people of Israel. It was at that time that Yehovah said to Yehoshua, make yourselves knives of flint and circumcise the people of Israel again, a second time. So Yehoshua made knives of flint and circumcised the people of Israel at Givat Ha'aralot. Now that doesn't mean they weren't circumcised twice. It means a second lot of people were circumcised. Those born during the 40 years that had never been circumcised. You can't circumcise a person twice. I want you to notice that the fear struck the kings when the Yarden was opened up at the point of Israel's history when the children of Israel were circumcised a second time. That means a mass circumcision for the second time. A mass of people that had been born during that 40 years. However, look at it this way. There are two circumcisions that we require. The Sea of Suf represents one, and the Yarden is the other. And something else occurred when Israel was circumcised the second time. In Yehoshua chapter 5 and verse 6, it says, because of the people of Israel walked 40 years in the desert until the whole nation, that is the fighting men who had left Egypt, had died out. And because they had not heeded what Yehovah said, Yehovah had sworn that he would not allow them to see the land which Yehovah swore to their ancestors that he would give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. The elders who had no faith and doubted were removed and could not enter into the promised land. When the people were circumcised, the kings were afraid and the Yarden was divided. And they entered the land. They also set up 12 stones in the same place where they were circumcised. And it was called Gilgal because of the circumcision. Gilgal is derived from the thought of circumcision since it means rolled away. Carrying on in Yehoshua 5 verses 7 to 9. So we raised up their children to take their place, and it was these whom Yehoshua circumcised. Till then they had been uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised while travelling. When all the nation had been circumcised, every one of them, they stayed there where they were in the camp until they healed. Yehovah said to Yehoshua, "Today I have rolled off from you the stigma of Egypt." And this is why the place had been called Gilgal, or rolling, ever since. It is more than foreskin being rolled away and cut off. The doubters were rolled away. And they were cut off. The reproach of Egypt was rolled away. We need to realize that the kind of people in Moshe's day could not enter Canaan. Later, they were revealed for what they really were. The likes of the rebels, such as Korach, Dathan, and Aviram. The disrespect of Miriam and Aharon over Moshe's wife. And then the crowd blamed Moshe for the earth's opening up and the plague hitting the people. All of that came out of those people. This was all a reproach to the cause of Yehovah and his kingdom. And it's a reproach from Egypt. Yah will not let us take the reproach of rebellion and fighting amongst each other and any other lewd sins from Egypt of our world. And our world is full of lewd sins at the moment. Yah will bring us in to the Canaan's blessings. The rebellion, the fighting, reproach are all a reproach to Yehovah. A reproach is an object of shame and disgrace that causes shame and disgrace on the people. In our lives as believers, there are two dividings that occur, the Sea of Suf and the Yarden River. The Sea of Suf speaks of sin being circumcised away, and the Yarden River speaks of carnality and fleshness being circumcised away. So have you received the second circumcision? The older generation was born of Egypt, as opposed to the younger generation who had no knowledge of the ways of Egypt, since they were too young, and others who had been born later. Represent these things in our hearts from the time of your salvation that linger and bring reproach to the kingdom of Yehovah today. These are the things that have to go before you so that you can enjoy Yah's promises. Once sin arose in Achan in the promised land, Achan was put to death. Yah does not tolerate this in the realm of the promised land living. It was not allowed in, and once it surfaced within, it was dealt with immediately. Regardless of positions and offices held by many carnal believers in the church today, Yah sees who is sincere and real and who genuinely wants his will in their lives and has circumcised away the reproaches, and Yah blesses them alone, while the rest live lives of unhappiness and fighting and stress, etc. If they are not flourishing in their ministries, they are not in Yah's will. A monument stands for those over the Yarden, for those who are spiritually mature, for those who roll away the reproach. No monument stood at the Sea of Suf. Many, in fact, a mixed multitude came in and start out with a real immersion and the real Ruach HaKodesh. But how many of them go on and endure to the end and experience the rolling away of the reproaches and into spiritual maturity? Not as many who go through the first one. And that is the real question. Have we gone through the second circumcision? Israel marched around their problems in the land with seven trumpets taken from rams. It said in Yehoshua chapter 6 and verse 4, seven Kohanim are to carry seven shofars in front of the ark. On the seventh day, you are to march around the city seven times and the Kohanim will blow the shofars. Now, they weren't silver trumpets that was mentioned in last week's Torah portion, but seven shofars. What does a shofar come from? It comes from a slaughtered ram. Okay? It can't come from a living ram. It comes from a slaughtered ram, which means at least four rams were slaughtered to get seven shofars. Revelation 5 and verse 6 says, then I saw standing there with the throne and the four living beings in the circle of the elders a lamb that appeared to have been slaughtered. He had seven horns and seven eyes, which are the sevenfold ruachs or spirits of Yehovah sent out on all the earth. Yeshua is the resurrected lamb of Revelation chapter 5, with the seven horns. Horns come from beasts of power, and seven signifies fullness and perfection. And blowing seven horns speaks of shouting the truths of the resurrection power of Yeshua HaMashiach. The 7 days of time before they shouted indicated the time required to get the full understanding of truth of his stake into our hearts. It can't come overnight and you get every revelation straight away. It doesn't happen that way. Then and only then we sound it out with full faith, when we have that full revelation. The walls that the doubters were afraid of are the very things that will fall down flat through our faith. In Bamidbar Numbers 13 and 28, it says, however, the people living in the land are fierce and the cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the Anakim there. The Anakim were giants, which made them feel as small as grasshoppers to a human. In Yehoshua chapter 6 and verse 20, it says, the people shouted with the shofars blowing. And when the people heard the sound of the shofars, the people let out a great shout, and the wall fell down flat. So the people went up into the city, each one straight ahead of him, and they captured the city. Once again, doubt complains while faith shouts. Their circumcision spoke of a weakening. These men had never been circumcised. The men were the men of the age that were able for war. And before the invasion of Canaan, they weakened themselves by circumcision. In Bereshit, or Genesis chapter 34, when Shechem defiled Yaakov's daughter Dinah, the son of Yaakov demanded their entire male population be circumcised. And in that state of weakness, they slew all these men. Circumcision is inflicting weakness, but it also speaks of cutting away the fleshliness of our lives through the water immersion of Colossians 2:11 and 12, which says, also, it was in union with him that you were circumcised with a circumcision not done by hands, but accomplished by stripping away the old nature's control over the body. In this circumcision done by the Messiah, you were buried along with him by being immersed, and in union with him, you were also raised up along with him by Yehovah's faithfulness that worked when he raised Yeshua from the dead. The Israel of Moshe's failed to trust in Yehovah 40 years before. But that was due to fear for their lives, and they all died having never entered the promised land. But Israel in Yehoshua's day experienced the circumcision equivalent to losing their lives. That is, letting go of all the things of flesh in faith for Yehovah to be with the resurrection life, and wound up entering the promised land and enjoying Yah's promises. If we hold on to our sins as a believer, we will dwindle away in unhappiness and in bitter lives. But if we let go of that fleshliness, the reproach of Egypt, and find a resurrection life in Yeshua, mingling with his own, we gain the strength to fight the giants in our lives. Every time you let go of fear of the flesh and trust in Yah, you are in a sense losing your life to find it again in Yeshua HaMashiach. And this is the only life that can empower and bless. If you never take a step of faith when facing the giants in your life, you will never be empowered by Yah's spirit of glory and resurrection. The kings of Canaan ought to have been afraid of Israel due to the crossing of the Sea of Suf, because back then, only the families in Egypt who were behind the blood were spared from the death that hit every firstborn. Yet Rahab hid in her home behind a scarlet cord, representing blood, and only her house remained alive afterwards when Israel crossed the Jordan River and fought Jericho. It's not a coincidence. It's a Yah incident. He made that possible. In Bamidbar Numbers 14:23-43, it says, "Don't go up there because Yehovah isn't with you. If you do, your enemies will defeat you. The Amalekim and the Canaanim are there ahead of you, and you will be struck down by the sword. The reason will be that you have turned away from following Yehovah, so that Yehovah won't be with you." Because of the bad report, through lack of faith, the blessing was removed. In Yehoshua chapter 5, verses 13 to 14, it says, "One day when Yehoshua was there by Jericho, he raised his eyes and looked, and in front of him stood a man with his drawn sword in his hand. Yehoshua went over to him and asked, 'Are you on our side or you are on the side of our enemies?' 'No,' he replied, 'but I am the commander of Yehovah's army. I have come just now.' Yehoshua fell down with his face to the ground and worshipped, and then asked, 'What does my Lord have to say to his servant?'" Yehoshua saw a sword in the hand of the angel of Yehovah. Amid circumcision, death of the older generation of doubters, reproach of Egypt had rolled away, and an orderly and organized army of Israel was entering Canaan. There was a sword. That sword was also at the entrance to the Garden of Eden, once Adam was taken out. The Messianic Jews of Hebrews 4 mentions a rest for the people of Yehovah, and also mentions a sword as the word of Yehovah. The word is sharper than any two-edged sword. The sword cuts out sin and sinners, but it does not cut down those who enter by faith. And this is why I believe we should start our day in Yah's word, as it helps us to learn more about Yah. It also is our protection for the day. It's a guidance on how we can live, what we should say, what we shouldn't say. And it makes us aware of sin and helps us avoid it. Are there any questions? None?